power lines. They're a hazard, not just for helicopters, but for airplanes too. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. Bob Miller, CFI, publisher of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, is my guest, as is often the case on Mondays. And today we're going to tackle a topic that I don't think we've ever talked about before, Bob, and that's power lines. Thanks for taking some time out for our listeners today.
Well, Paul, it's always enjoyable.
Let's start out by talking about the scenario, the specific accident that you related in Over the Airwaves, the March edition, under the headline, Arriving Low, Beware. And tell us about this accident that inspired you to write on this topic.
Very simply, Paul, a 6,800-hour Cessna 210 pilot departed from an airport up in Wisconsin en route to Muscle Shoals, Alabama Regional Airport, which was his destination. And when he approached the airport, he announced on the CTAF frequency where he was. He was several miles out. The weather was good, 10 miles visibility, overcast skies at 5,500 feet. And as he was approaching the airport, something went terribly wrong. And for unknown reasons, the individual just simply dropped a little too low on his final approach to the airport traffic pattern and struck high tension wires, power lines that were just about 100 feet off of the ground. And as I thought about this accident, and I've thought about my own flying experiences, how many times do we, in flying in an unfamiliar area, good weather, we get the airport in sight, and for some reason, we either are focused on the airport or focused on finding frequencies or whatever, we allow ourselves to get down to pattern altitude several miles from the airport. Nothing wrong with that, per se, I suppose. But then we get a little bit lower than that, whether it's an attitude to duck under and get a little better low, look at it. But the tendency is to get it down to pattern altitude so aggressively that we begin to run into things. And given the choice of having to, put the brakes on and achieve a steep descent or experience a steep descent, I would rather do that. Perhaps maybe even putting the airplane in a side slip or a forward slip to lose altitude by arriving at the pattern a little bit high. I would much rather have to do that than drag it in low and slow over unfamiliar terrain where there indeed may be obstacles that may catch us by surprise.
Well, I guess I'd have to wonder, we have no idea why this happened in this particular case. But this would seem to be another of the kinds of accidents we could run into if we're trying to cheat minimums on an approach to an airport.
But this wasn't the case in this one. They had overcast skies at 5,500 feet. The NTSB concluded that there did not appear to be anything mechanically wrong with the airplane that would cause it to perhaps lose power and descend into the power lines. I think it's just a case of another reason why we never, ever, no, not ever, want to fly airplanes low to the ground. There is just no earthly reason I can find to having an airplane fly any lower to the ground than is absolutely essential to maneuver into the airport. To bring it down to pattern altitude 2 or 3 or 4 miles away, in an unfamiliar area, in my mind, is just asking for trouble. There could be high towers that are well known to the local folks just 3 miles from the airport, but to an unknown individual, that just exposes us to that risk. So I'm arguing in this short piece is, there's nothing to be gained aerodynamically from arriving low in the pattern. There just isn't. It just doesn't make good sense. It doesn't make good sense in the event of a power failure. You have no place to go. It doesn't make sense from the standpoint of obstacle clearance. There's just no reason to do that. for some reason, we'll look out there and we'll see people dragging the airplane in low and slow. Now, you're right, Paul. You know, some of us will do it in a scud running environment where presumably we have no choice. You know, we should have stayed on the ground in the first place. But in VFR conditions, why fly low?
All right. Well, Bob, when we come back from the break, I want to talk about Dutch Rules, your air work column for this month. This is kind of a fun one to do for me. It's a fairly low risk, high value proposition. Bob Miller is my guest. Back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près de moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. In Bob's newsletter a few months ago, he began doing a regular feature called Airwork, and this is designed to get pilots back to the basics and talk about some of the things that we can do to hone our basic proficiency. And Bob, the one you mentioned in this month's edition is called Dutch Rolls. Tell us what the point of a Dutch roll is and how it's attempted.
Well, a Dutch roll, and what is the point of a Dutch roll? That's always the question that the student asks after we try the procedure. Basically, a Dutch roll is rocking the airplane, if you will, back and forth along its longitudinal axis. That's from the tip of the nose to the tip of the tail, just rolling the airplane back and forth using our rudder and using our aileron. Now, if you do this, you will quickly note that the airplane is very seldom operating in a coordinated fashion. In other words, the little ball in the inclinometer is certainly not hanging where it's supposed to be in the cage at the bottom. So one would naturally ask, why in a real-world scenario would I want to be proficient at Dutch rolls? Because it is not a coordinated maneuver. Well, if you think of what we do when we set up for landing in a crosswind, where we must keep the nose of the airplane aligned with the center line of the runway while at the same time rolling into the wind, we have, in effect, a Dutch roll right over the runway. So if we want to become more proficient in crosswinds, why not climb up to a safe altitude, 3,000 feet or more, and just basically pick a point on the horizon, and with our rudder, with our pedals, keep the nose pointed on that point in the horizon, and then with our aileron, bank the wings. What we're doing up there is, in fact, a Dutch roll. Is it a coordinated maneuver? No. But it is a maneuver that is designed to keep the airplane pointed in a direction we want it pointed in. And after all, that's all we have to do in landing in a crosswind. So practicing slow Dutch rolls at a safe altitude is one surefire way of becoming far more proficient in crosswind landings.
Well, I have done these. They're actually kind of fun to do. I mean, it's a challenge, and you never really feel uncomfortable doing them. I guess it's surprising to me that more people don't just do them for fun. I mean, there's a lot of things you need to do every once in a while that's kind of grueling, but this is just entertainment.
Well, this is entertainment, and it is fun, but it has a real solid utilitarian value, because up there at a safe altitude, if you can keep that nose pointed on that point on the horizon and then bank the wings 30 degrees at the same time and keep the nose pointed at that point on the horizon, you are doing a Dutch roll. And again, I want to emphasize, the airplane is not coordinated. So, you know, just doing them at a high altitude, one says, well, why do these? That's always been the problematic question. Why do we do these? Okay, they're fun, but what value do they have? And when you think about what you need to do in a crosswind landing, that answers that question.
Is a Dutch roll, which obviously robs you, if you're doing them at altitude, of any of the visual cues of being close to the runway, really helpful when you get it down low?
Yes, because when you step it down low, so when after you do them and master them at a safe altitude, come find a long runway and a cooperating tower controller, if it's a tower-controlled field, and come down to, say, 100 feet above the ground and fly the whole length of that runway, 100 feet AGL, right off the center line, and bank the wings 30 degrees into the wind, or just bank the airplane 30 degrees, while at the same time using opposite rudder to keep the nose of the airplane pointed straight down the runway. Do that at 100 feet. Then come back around and do it at 50 feet. Then come back around and do it at 15 feet. And then come back around and do it and land in either an actual or a simulated crosswind. One of the biggest difficulties we have in teaching crosswind landings is directional control of the airplane over the runway. You know, if the pilot rolls into the wind, as we teach him to do, then he loses directional control and the airplane touches down with an enormous side load on the tires. And so we have to instill in the pilot, okay, we're going to cross control the airplane. This is something they've been taught never to do in primary flying. You know, we always want to fly coordinated. We don't, unless we're doing a deliberate slip, we do not want to fly cross control. But in a crosswind landing, we have to fly cross control. Now, landing mishaps are the number one maneuvering accidents in all of general aviation. Fortunately, they're mainly non-fatal. Now, in landing accidents, if you go in and look at the accident record among all landing accidents, typically you're going to find that crosswinds were a factor. And that just proves to me that we're not, as a body of pilots, terribly proficient in crosswind landings. The slow Dutch roll at a safe altitude is another technique. It's another tool in the flight instructor's bag of tricks to help his or her student become more crosswind proficient.
Well, Bob, you've made me want to go out and do a few now. I know when I was learning, my primary training was taken from a tailwheel guy, and we were flying champs. And, you know, he used to teach us the wing low technique, and we'd actually come in and touch down on one wheel.
Sure.
And that's kind of a similar drill, but I haven't done Dutch rolls in years, and I want to go up and play with them now.
There you go.
As always, we appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again next Monday.
Thanks, Bob.
You can find the current issue of Bob's newsletter and links to Bob Miller flight training at overtheairwaves.com. While you're there, sign up to get an email reminder when each new free edition of Over the Airwaves comes out. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.